This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
The land. Who owns it? Who may use it? Who benefits from it? Basic questions, the answers to which are profound, complex, and have enormous implications for human life. These questions are at the heart of a struggle now occurring in much of Africa. As millions of Africans are displaced from their lands and livelihoods, often in the name of modernization. Wealthy nations and corporations are purchasing vast tracts of lands, often under various dubious circumstances. Frederick Mousseau is policy director of the Oakland Institute in California. Over the last year, the Institute has released several reports under the heading Understanding Land Investment Deals in Africa. Frederick Mousseau joins me now on the phone from Oakland, California. Good morning, Frederick, and welcome to Red Eye.
Good morning, Manuel. Thanks for having me.
So, companies purchase land all over the world, and there are varying controversies that go with these purchases. Why have you chosen to focus on Africa? What is the significance of what is going on there now?
Africa is really one of the key targets of this modern rush on land. What we have seen just in 2009 was 60 million hectares acquired over the world, but it was 70% of these new purchases in Africa. So Africa is really the center, the epicenter of this pattern that we have identified.
From your reports, it seems like African countries are being coerced and manipulated into changing sort of the fundamental conceptual and legal frameworks for land rights and land use. What kinds of changes are occurring in these areas?
Oh, many changes, and actually it's a mix of old and new patterns that we are seeing there. The old ones is what the World Bank and donor nations, rich countries, have been pushing for many years, along with structural adjustments, which was a reform of the legal system, of the land tenure system, make the country attractive for foreign investment, make foreign investor much more comfortable in doing business in these countries. So the World Bank, IMF, have been very strong in setting up a number of offices which were helping governments to really reform their systems to make their environment attractive for investors. What we are seeing also as more recent patterns and recent pushes from corporations actually, but also the governments like the U.S. government is a push to reform laws such as the protective laws on genetically modified crops. We have seen, for instance, in Tanzania, a legal framework which is very protective of the local crops and local environment, and which so far was banning GMOs. And now investors are saying, okay, we are ready to bring some dollars here, but you have to reform your laws because we want to grow GMOs on the continent. And clearly we see an alliance of investors and corporations like Monsanto who are seeking entry points in different countries in Africa from where these technologies could spread over the continent. And we know that once it's entered in one place, it is very easy for GMOs to spread all over because of the contamination problems.
What kinds of land use is traditional for Africa in terms of... How do most Africans see the land?
Yeah, that's possibly one of the reasons for Africa to be so attractive to investors, is that most of the land in Africa is not owned by titles, by people who have their title of their property and their fences. most of the land is under customary rights. It's owned by the state officially, by the government, and people and communities have customary rights. And the problem with these rights and with this lack of titles is that it's very easy for a number of governments to declare people as squatters, or to declare that this piece of land there is not being used, while it is actually used in a number of ways. We have found in our different studies in seven African countries, we have many issues with this notion of availability of land. We are told there are millions of hectares available in Africa. But when you look at it, you find what? You find grazing land, which is used by pastoralists, people who have livestock for their cattle. And of course, they don't use this land permanently. They will use it on a seasonal basis, and when government surveyors or when investors are visiting, it's very possible that they see only grass and nobody on it, and they can say, "Oh, this looks like good land we can use." Another key target for this investment is all the forest land that we find still in very large amounts in Africa. And same, forest land is often considered by government and international institutions as unused and available, but forests actually provide critical services to communities. They are essential resources for timber, for food, for medicine, but also for the environment. They are also part of the ecosystem, which allows the water and the rain to be there, and which protects the overall environment of the people. So these are like forest grazing land are typical of land that is being said to be available, but it is not. And the last key pattern we find is fallow land. In Africa, many farmers use fallow land, so they will cultivate land for a number of years, then they will leave it to recover for 5 or 10 years. And same, fallow land is being today confiscated for these new large-scale plantations. And this is really jeopardizing the future livelihood of the farmers who have been relying on this system for decades or for centuries.
So how are the farmers and the communities and people affected? What kinds of effects are we seeing?
It varies, of course, between countries. In some countries, we have just eviction of the land they have been farming or they've been using. So overnight, people are being told they have to move to another village and they can't use the land and they can't use the water anymore. And in Ethiopia, for instance, we have cases where people are told to move and told to relocate somewhere else. And when they ask about their future, they are told that they should not worry; they will get international food aid, which, by the way, comes often from the U.S. To feed them. And this is this kind of craziness in the current developments. Is we see places like Ethiopia, which are highly dependent on international food aid, and Ethiopia, as we saw again recently, is a country which is always affected every 2-3 years by severe food crisis affecting 10-20 million people every 2-3 years, who relies then on international food aid. So we see such places which are now transforming their land into plantations for export. So we see this two ways road with trucks exporting crops to some other countries and trucks bringing food aid from the U.S. and Europe, which is really concerning as a development model that is being put forward. It's not as bad everywhere. Some places people are expecting that they can share the land with investors and they can benefit from the investment, and in many parts of Africa, actually, farmers are welcoming investors as they see them as people who are going to bring development. Unfortunately, for what we see, the promises of development will go from, okay, we will build a school there, we'll dig a well there, so very kind of vague, and we're not sure very fair exchanges in the deal. Other circumstances, they will have schemes where they expect to have some partnership with investors on the plantations or get jobs, but so far what we have seen is that all the promises in terms of employment are really overstated, and we haven't found really so far a large scale investment bringing economic development and jobs and joy as promised by governments and investors.
I understand there are significant movements developing to bring all this to light and also to fight these deals in varying ways. What kinds of successes have you seen in this regard?
We've been actually very, very glad that some of our report, by exposing some of the deals, had an impact, and there have been several countries where we could see this impact. In Sudan, there is, because it is still there, a U.S. investor. We had an incredible deal for 600,000 hectares of land for $25,000. And that was a deal signed in 2008 between this U.S. investor and some community leaders in this province of southern Sudan, which has just become independent. And nobody knew locally about this deal. There were a few individuals who had been receiving money from the investor to put their signature on the paper. But the populations and most of the community leaders over there, even people from the government, local governments, didn't really know about that. And so when our report came out in June, some radios had programs explaining what was happening and talking about this deal, and then people started to hear about that and moved to the capital to meet the president and complain and express their complete rejection of this kind of deal. So this is one of the success story. Well, it's not yet a success story because it's still it hasn't been cancelled officially, but at least we can see that by exposing what is happening, because most of what is happening in a lot of secrecy. So what we see is by exposing what is happening, we do have chances of community people getting together and starting to stand up in front of investors or officials, corrupt officials who might have given away their land. Unfortunately, many parts of Africa, people don't have a say, and governments in countries like Ethiopia just consider that they have, that the government has all the rights of the land, and that people don't have any right to complain. So it will vary, but we really hope by doing this work, exposing, supporting local voices, local groups who can mobilize, we can have a mobilization of the people to really express their concerns and talk to the government on what they really need in terms of development, what they really need in terms of investment. And so far, the problem is it's really a top down thing that is happening, where the vision for development that has been promoted by institutions like the World Bank and by many governments in North and South is that we need to modernize agriculture, we need large-scale plantations, we need to bring tractors and GMOs and all of this. And farmers need to say what kind of alternatives they have to propose, and we really need to. We are trying at the Auckland Institute to give them this space and help them expressing their different vision.
Well, I want to thank you very much for joining us this morning, Frederick.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure. I hope we'll have more chances to follow this. I have much more to say. I hope you can visit us on our website and read. There's a lot of interesting materials, and it is really a current development on which we are we are working on a day-to-day basis with many groups in Africa, and it requires interest and support everywhere, because we need to talk to governments locally, but also to talk to investors and governments in rich countries who are supporting this development. So hopefully your listeners can also play a role in this, engage in this concerning development.
I will announce your website as well, and hopefully we will talk to you again in the future sometime.
Okay, I hope so. Have a very good day.
I've been speaking with Frederick Mousseau. He is the policy director at the Oakland Institute in California. You can find the Institute's reports on understanding land investment deals in Africa by visiting their website, and their website is oaklandinstitute.org.